In just a moment, biographies and sound, but first...
There it is again. Say It With Music, your invitation to 2 full hours of the best live music weekday mornings on NBC Bandstand. This week, Ralph Flanagan's group, plus Russ Morgan and his orchestra, bring you mellow and relaxing tunes. But don't get too relaxed, because the four lads are back again as Messrs. Music. And Bert Parks, your bandstand MC, keeps you smiling between numbers. It's a great show live all this week on NBC Bandstand.
Stay tuned for Biographies and Sound on NBC.
My sister came in one day, and she said, I believe, she says, that you could paint with oil. She had taken lessons in her younger days in oil. And so I thought I'd try it. And I did. I painted quite a nice picture. I can't remember what it was. Caldor came through here one day, and he bought it. And he still has that picture.
National Broadcasting Company presents America's Grandma, the story of Grandma Moses, another of the prize-winning transcribed series of Biographies in Sound. Narrated by the veteran NBC reporter W.W. Chaplin, America's Grandma paints a sound picture of the little lady from Cambridge Valley through the voices of those who know her.
My name is Lillian Gish. It was my good fortune at one time to be chosen by television to play Grandma Moses, and it resulted in my meeting this inspiring, wonderful woman and artist. She has probably the strongest spirit of any person, any woman I've ever met. Personally, she's very small and frail, but not mentally. She's as keen and alert as any mind you'll ever brush against, much quicker than most of the young people I know. We started on television with her life at the age of 5, as a little girl waiting for her father to come home, as he had promised her a red dress. And when the father arrived, there was no red dress but a box of crayons. And the child cried from disappointment. And the mother asked why he didn't keep his word, and he said, I couldn't. The department stores were closed. And she said, yes, but it isn't a holiday. And he said, no, but Abraham Lincoln was shot.
Startling, isn't it? Startling, too, to realize that Grandma Moses spans nearly a century of life in America. Born 1860, still spry and alert today, 3 days before her 96th birthday, Grandma Moses is probably this country's best-known, best-loved painter. Nearly everyone has seen her brightly colored landscapes, if not in galleries, then on her Christmas cards. But Grandma the person is more colorful than any of her paintings, and even her harshest critics agree on that. So this is about Grandma Moses, housewife, mother, painter, philosopher, and wit, a lady who's been called the American phenomenon. A few facts, briefly. She wasn't always called Grandma Moses. Her parents, Russell and Margaret Robertson, named her Anna Mary, and she was born in upstate New York, near the Vermont border where she lives today. At the age of 12, Anna Mary Robertson went to work as a hired girl. At 27, she met Thomas Moses. They married and set out for North Carolina, where Thomas had a job as manager of a horse farm. But they stopped off in Stanton, Virginia, for the weekend. And folks there talked them into staying, and Mr. and Mrs. Moses were directed to a certain Mr. Bell.
Mr. Bell says, who are you? He says, my name is Moses. Where'd you come from? Told him he come from New York State. Well, where are you going? Well, I expected to go to North Carolina. What you going there for? Why, he says, I was going to take charge of this horse farm. Don't think of going to North Carolina. It's the wilderness down there. It was at that time, I expect. And he talked to me, and he says, now, you better stay right here in the valley. He says, there's no better place for you. He says, if you're going to be a farmer. He says, and I've got a nice little home out here about 3 miles from Staunton. I'll take you out there. You come down tomorrow evening, and we'll go out and see it. Well, my husband come back, and he told me there's a conversation, and he waited till evening. Well, we call it here evening after candlelight in the day. Evening is late in the night. And he went down, and as soon as he stepped into the door, the man says, I told you to come down here in the evening. He says, well, this is evening. Oh, he says, you northerners call it that. We call it evening here, he says, after 12 o'clock, which they do. And so he says, well, we can't see the lamb tonight. He says, you'll have to come tomorrow. So my husband came home, and he made up his mind to go out the next day and see this little farm that he had. He thought, he says, you stay here a year, and if you don't like it, well, then you can go on farther. So he went out, and he liked the place. And less than a week after we were married, we were housekeeping among strange people in a strange land. There was a good many of the southerners had no use for the northerners. It takes time to get over that hard feeling. And lots of them was abused during the war. The army would come in and take the fiddles right off from their stove, take it out to their soldiers, and things like that. He said it wasn't very pleasant.
Well, I remember her as a distinguished-looking, nice-looking, motherly lady.
Guy Cameron Keister of Verona, Virginia.
My daddy would come home and tell what a pretty bird or something she'd painted on a water pitcher or something. I remember him telling that, but I never saw any of her paintings till after she moved away from me. I just remember him as a farmer and outstanding Yankee.
Grandma didn't have much time for painting on canvas in those days. She was too busy running a house and raising a big family, 10 children in all. She didn't think her husband should be the family's only provider, so she went into business on a modest scale, gave her neighbors their first taste of potato chips, and soon was churning them out by the barrel. She also made butter.
When I first went to Virginia, the butter we get, you could get it for 8 cents a pound. Some of it would be good, and some of it you couldn't eat. So I bought the cow from this family that was there down the place. I gave $25 for it. And during the winter, my husband bought another, and he gave $27 for it. And so my neighbor, Mrs. Carter, she says, well, what are you going to do with so much cream? She says, what will you do with that? I says, I'll churn that, I says, and make butter. I'll send it down to the store and exchange it for groceries, such as sugar or oatmeal, anything like that that I needed, and which I did to Mr. Spittler's. And looked good to him. He undid it, looked very good to him. Smelled of it, smelled good. He put his hand down in his pants pockets and pulled out his jackknife. And then he took a taste of it. He liked that. He said he'd take it, and that week he called in Mr. Moses in again, and he says, if you have any more good butter, he says, up there, bring it down here. I'll give you 15 cents a pound for it.
Within a few years, Mrs. Moses' famous pure cream butter was being sold at a resort hotel for 50 cents a pound. It was hard work, but what people remember was Mrs. Moses' fondness for the paintbrush. Miss Carrie Dudley of Fort Defiance, Virginia.
In 1900, my mother and my brother and I lived in the home with Grandma Moses 2 months. And Mrs. Moses was a lovely little person. She had light hair, if I remember right. And was very a wonderful housekeeper, and she loved to paint. She painted the walls in our old home, and Grandma Moses had them all painted different colors. She would have a wall blue and a ceiling pink. And the next room you'd go in, below the wainscoting, it would be green and pink. And she was very artistic with all of her work.
As long as I can remember my mother,
I think that she has had a suppressed desire to paint.
Daughter, Mrs. Winona Fisher.
I can remember when I was a small child, if Grandma decorated a cake, if it were to be a white frosted cake, she reserved part of the frosting. This white frosting would be colored with vegetable coloring. If she didn't happen to have vegetable coloring, maybe she'd open a can of red raspberries and use raspberry juice to color the frosting. This frosting she would use in a homemade pastry tube. And she would decorate the cake with flowers or birds or children at play, depending on the occasion for which the cake was baked. If she baked a pie, she had her own finishing touch for the crust, where most people would punch a couple of holes in the crust to let the steam escape. Grandma would have fern leaves or a tree. And I think that that was her way of showing her artistic temperament all through the years.
Winona was one of five children who went north with their parents in 1907. The other five children were buried in the Shenandoah Valley. The Moses family had lived in Virginia for nearly 20 years, had farmed and prospered, but Thomas was homesick for the North, so he bought a farm near Eagle Bridge, New York, in the Cambridge Valley where Grandma was born, and he farmed there for another 20 years, right up to the day he died. Her children grown, grandchildren on the way, Mrs. Moses finally found time for her favorite hobby. At the age of 78, when most people would be ready to call it a life, this farm woman from Eagle Bridge started a new life. Daughter-in-law, Mrs. Hugh Moses.
Grandma was making beautiful yarn pictures. Her sister, Celestia, saw them and told her that if she could make such beautiful yarn pictures, she should try to do some painting because Grandma was having trouble with her fingers, which had arthritis. So she started painting some pictures, and Hugh and I took some down to this women's exchange store in Hoosick Falls.
And that's where it happened. Grandma Moses turned the liability of arthritis into an asset. Louis Caldor, a New York engineer and art critic, was driving through Hoosick Falls. He had a headache, stopped off at Thomas's drugstore. Hildegard Backert of the Galerie Saint-Étienne in New York knows the story.
When Mr. Calder saw her first pictures, they were very, very tiny works. They were darker than the usual Grandma Moses that people know nowadays. The figures in them were very small, and the quality of the work was halting and hesitant. Now, Mr. Calder saw those pictures gathering dust in the drugstore window, and he thought they were quite nice, and he bought them for a few dollars. He asked if he could see the artist. Yes, he was told. She was an old lady living way over in Eagle Bridge. Well, that wasn't very far. Mr. Calder went there, and he didn't find Grandma Moses home. But her daughter-in-law, Dorothy Moses, was home, and she told him, yes, Grandma has some more pictures, and would he come in the morning, and then she would certainly have some ready. Well, he said about 10 would be fine. Well, Grandma came home, and she had a sleepless night because she didn't have 10. However, she did find one very big picture of the Shenandoah Valley, and she thought it would be a very good idea to divide that up, and she found two frames that fitted the now created two pictures, and she put them in, and by the morning she had her 10 paintings ready for Mr. Calder. Now, Calder took them and took them down to New York, and he showed them for about a year to various people, including Sidney Janis and Emily Jenauer. And Sidney Janis put them in an exhibition in an upstairs members' room of the Museum of Modern Art, where they were seen by a few people. He exhibited a few of them there. However, that didn't bring her work close to many people, and Mr. Calder was getting quite discouraged until he came to see Dr. Otto Collier, the owner of Gallery St. Etienne. Dr. Collier had been interested in folk art of all countries all his life, and when he saw those pictures, he became very enthusiastic over them, and he thought that Mr. Calder was bringing him something that was beyond the usual talent, something that was worth looking into and very, very interesting. He decided to have Grandma Moses' first one-man show in October 1940 at his gallery in New York City.
Her first exhibition at the Galerie Saint-Étienne in New York opened under the title What a Farm Wife Painted. Anna Umstead, director of the museum in Syracuse, New York, remembers those early days.
I met Grandma Moses for the first time back in 1941 when our Syracuse Museum held a New York State exhibition of paintings open to artists throughout the state, outside of New York City and the metropolitan area. Grandma was represented by four paintings in this showing, and her picture entitled The Old Oaken Bucket was awarded a $100 purchase prize given by the late Mr. Thomas J. Watson, president of the IDM Corporation and a generous art patron. Grandma came on for the preview, and never shall I forget the thrill we all had when Grandma, a great-grandmother at 81, was summoned to our auditorium stage to receive her prize from the hands of Mr. Watson himself. Of course, we did not discover Grandma Moses. She had already been discovered, and her paintings had been exhibited in New York. But this was her first recognition by way of a prize, and national publicity followed. 3 years later, we had a one-man show by this one wonderful grandmother at our Syracuse Museum. She again came on for the preview and stayed at my house for the weekend. She came armed with two jars of her delicious jams, a present for me. They gave her prizes for her jams and jellies at the county fair, she told me, with obvious pride, but no prizes for her pictures. At that time, when she was only 84, she looked very tiny and frail, but she had the most alert, sprightly manner, the brightest eyes, and such a ready smile. She loved the way her pictures looked in our gallery and the supper party given in her honor. She had one grand time, she told me. And indeed, she was the most appreciative and lovable little guest imaginable. It was a joy to entertain her.
Writer Frank Sullivan has said, "She's not Whistler's mother, she's Whistler's grandmother." He described her as a cricket of a woman, no bigger than a pint of cider. Lewis Jones, director of the State Historical Association at Cooperstown, New York, had other impressions.
You remember a wren of a woman, tiny and alert, very cheerful and sunny, but at the same time a sputterer, a kind of superficial irritability that was always counteracted by the sparkling of her eyes.
A combination of success and advancing years have moved Grandma Moses from the old two-story farmhouse to a nearby modern ranch house. Grandma says she misses her upstairs room because it had such a pretty view. But the view from the new picture window is just about the same. Everywhere, the green hills, red barns, and white houses remind you of a Grandma Moses painting, and Grandma is still at work. Again, daughter Winona.
Perhaps not everyone knows that Grandma is unusually active for a person of her age. She's a very early riser, and unusually so if she smells coffee. After her coffee, she usually paints a little while or reads a little while, and then she'll go back to her room and tidy up things because no one can do anything just as Grandma wants it done. So she'll putter around a little bit. Then she'll come back and settle down and paint till possibly 1 o'clock. In the meanwhile, she will have finished another cup of coffee. And she'll go in and take a nap. It may be only 15 minutes. And she'll come out and I'll say to her, "Well, Grandma, I thought you said you were going to sleep an hour." "Well, it was an hour by my clock." And I'll say, "Well, you've only been in there 15 minutes by my clock." Well, then my clock must be wrong. By that time, the mail will have arrived. They'll come in with the mail, stand around and talk about this and that and the other, and you'd think she'd stop. No, she continues her painting, listening, her ears going, but paintbrush going same time, and she'll get the paper. So after she's read the paper, she'll paint a while longer. And by that time, we have an early dinner. And then Grandma will watch television. And about 9:30, she begins to look at the clock and think it's about time to go to bed.
What's the Moses artistic recipe? Hildegard Backert.
She uses masonite, which is strong board, strong pressed wood, actually. And it lasts a good many hundred years, she says. To prepare her board, she covers it with linseed oil, lets that dry, then three coats of flat white paint. Each coat she lets dry. That is Grandma's own method, her own recipe, as she puts it. Then she's ready to start her picture. She sketches in the hills with pencil, roughly. And if she wants houses, she puts those in with pencil, outlining them very carefully, including the windows, even, and the doors. She mixes her colors, not in a palette, but in bottle tops. She also doesn't use an easel. She sits at her table with the picture in her lap and tilted against the table that's in front of her. When you look at her paint, you have the feeling that she's not really a primitive in that respect. She knows how to go about her task. She is an artist who is experienced in her work. She handles her colors with very subtle dexterity. She knows what their consistency is. She understands. You have a feeling she's not just dabbling in paint. This is her medium, her profession, I should say. And then, for instance, the picture she was doing had a house in the center and a big tree on the left side. And suddenly I see that she was sketching a big house on the right side that wasn't planned for. And I say, well, Grandma, how did the big house come in? What for? She says, why, it's got to be here. It has to harmonize with the big tree on the left. And so you see, even though she doesn't use words like balance and professional expressions, she knows what she's doing. She's a real artist.
At work or rest, Grandma can always be counted on for a laugh. Actress Lillian Gish.
The photographers came in and brought their lights. It began to be a little warm. She said, I think I'm going to charge them a quarter for this. Then they brought more lights. She says, no, I think I'll raise it to 50 cents. And then when all the lights came in and it got quite uncomfortable, she said, this is worth a dollar and a half.
Miss Backert.
One day she was asked to come to an exhibition of her work not too far from her home, and she didn't feel like going, and she said, why should I go? I've seen those pictures.
And you don't grow up in a family of 10, as Grandma did, without learning that you have to assert yourself. Call it determination or spunk.
I wanted to sit down at the table with my brother, younger brother. He was younger than I. And the other two brothers were older, and we had company, and I wanted to sit at the table with the rest of them. And Mother said, no, the table was crowded. And Mother says, no, you wait with me, you be a lady now and wait with me. And then I commenced to cry. And my grandfather, he was a rather stern man, and he says, children should be seen, not heard. Well, that made me mad, and I bawled a louder. And my father says, if you don't stop, I'll have to take you out the shop. And then I got mad, and oh, goodness. Oh, I was very mad. I was about 4 years old. And he got up and took hold of my hand, led me out to the shop, and he picked up a big shaving. And now he says, you're going to be a good girl. I stomped my foot. If you strike me with that bar, I'll never speak to you again. And I can see him smile. He wore a large beard. as they wore in those days. You see, the, all this little part of the face was covered with a beard. And I can see the smile yet. As he looked at me, took my hand, led me back to the table. So I won my battle. I won that myself. It was my disposition. If my brothers could climb up on the eave of the house, I could go up to the peak. That was just the disposition. I don't know why. I wouldn't let them outdo me.
Grandma's friends liked to drop in for a visit and tell stories on her. Charles John Stevenson runs a weekly newspaper and has a radio program on WGY in Schenectady.
For a number of years, up in Cambridge, we have had what we call a Green Mountain Night. It's a dinner that we hold up there. The Lions Club is the sponsor for it, and I've been the toastmaster or master of ceremonies for a good many years at this dinner, and we wouldn't have that dinner if it weren't for Grandma Moses, because it's really in honor of Grandma, and we just give it a fancy name, Green Mountain Night, because that is the bait that we use in getting her up there. Is that right, Grandma?
Grandma is the bait.
Well, that's good. We had you on the hook many times, so we're getting along nicely. Well, at this dinner, we usually invite the governor of Vermont and any other dignitaries that we can get hold of, an occasional congressman or a senator or someone of that sort. And then we, of course, have Grandma, because she is the center of attraction and the guest of honor. And it's always my privilege, apparently, to sit next to her. I usually put her between the governor and myself. She looks good between a couple of men, and she takes care of herself, except in this one particular evening. There arose a little difficulty over the serving of the dinner. At the Hotel Cambridge, they try to serve individually, and when the vegetables come around, instead of just passing the dishes around family style, they serve them in little dishes. And I remember that night we had peas, green peas. And I was, of course, so interested in Grandma that I didn't care whose peas I ate, and ended up by my eating her peas, and I think she still accuses me of eating one or two other of her dishes.
No. Yes, I really think that you eat my dinner.
Well,
and I had to push my plate on, and I eat somebody else's dinner. So, well, I think it was all right in the long run.
Well, as long as you're satisfied, but I have often felt, Grandma, that I would just love to come down here with a big pot of peas someday, and we'll just dish out the peas here and let you have your fill of peas.
I'm no lover of peas, really.
Now, listen, you don't mean to tell me after all these years that you didn't care for those peas anyway.
No, I did not.
Well, that adds 5 years to my life. I've been worrying about that ever since.
I'm sorry to tell you that I'm no lover of peas, because once my husband gathered a lot, and I was going to have a nice supper of peas, and he shelled them and had them all ready, and then he's looking over, picking out extra pieces, leaves, and so on, to have them all ready for the pot. And he discovered that they were stung on the side, and he broke it open to see there was a little worm. He tried another one, there was another worm, and he tried another. Then he dumped the whole mess over into the garden. No more peas for him. No more peas for me.
Another visitor with a story, Connie Hamm, a schoolteacher from Tarrytown, New York.
Remember, I had no ribbon to tie the little package. So I looked in my sewing box, and I had some very tiny rickrack, two shades of blue. And I thought, well, now this would look pretty. It was just a little small box. So I tied it up. And Grandma Moses opened the box, and she was rolling this up so carefully. And she says, I'll make a little dress for my granddaughter out and trim it with this. I mean, she always appreciates every little thing and thinks of something to do with it. Whereas I have often spent a lot of time doing up a package elegantly, and when the person undoes it, they just go like this and throw it to the side, you know. Grandma Moses, she really sees possibilities in everything.
Things didn't used to be so plentiful when I was a child. We had to save. And my mother used to save it for 7 years. And then if you don't find no purpose for it, why, you can throw it away.
Mrs. Rachel Baker, another old friend, is Grandma's honorary chauffeur.
Driving with Grandma has been a most interesting experience. We've been, lots of places around. And personally, I have become much more conscious of scenery than I ever was before. Just, to pick out the beautiful view one way or another. Grandma tells me I could paint, but I know better than that. She always says everybody can paint, but I don't quite agree with her. But she likes to ride in the back seat of the car. She says that she's a good back seat driver, but she doesn't bother me any.
It doesn't seem to matter whether Grandma is sitting next to an old friend, the governor, or the president of the United States. She's still Grandma. One time, President Truman invited her to the White House. She tells the story in her sometimes crowded, chattering living room.
Pretty soon, Harry came in, and excuse me for using the given name, but he seems like one of my own boys, and sat down between us, and we talked about farm and farm crops. After time, I said, there's a beautiful piano. I says, do you play piano on the piano? And he, sometimes, he says. And then he got up and went over and played on it. But I can't tell you the name of the tune now that he played. But it was very nice.
But Grandma stays on the fence politically.
Well, I have one here. It was a Christmas card of Ike's when he lived in France. He's a good painter. He painted that of his backyard, and before he was president, he sent it to me. Now, he had it in his head way back somewhere that he was going to be president, and he wanted my vote.
During her visit to Washington, President Truman presented the Women's National Press Club Award for Outstanding Accomplishment in Art. Grandma and her daughter-in-law returned home to a hero's welcome.
When we arrived in Eagle Bridge, there was a gathering of about 800 people with a parade and band and quite a ceremony. She was really thrilled with the whole thing.
There were more prizes, more exhibits, more honors, 2 doctor's degrees. Grandma Moses was famous.
I've known Grandma for 25 years.
An old friend, Mrs. Ethel Cook.
She was a plain and simple woman from a quiet countryside. And after all these years, today she's still the plain and simple person from the countryside, completely unaffected by all the honors and tributes which have been bestowed upon her.
Daughter Winona puts it this way.
You have to know, be around Grandma to know. Nothing is, it's kind of, as she says, everything's ish bubble.
America's Grandma, the biography and sound of Grandma Moses, will continue after a 10-second pause for station identification.
At one time, Grandma Moses sold her paintings for a few dollars. Today, they're likely to run $1,000 and up. And there are Moses' fabrics and tiles, and of course, those Christmas cards. But what do the art critics say?
This is Alfred Frankfurter, editor of Art News.
Is Grandma Moses a good painter?
Within her own frame of reference, I should say she was a quite good painter. within the frame of reference of Michelangelo, which would be colossally unfair to put her next to, I should say no. I think she's a folk artist to whom art is a form of craftsmanship, a form of artisanry, as against a form of creative art. Now, that may sound like a very fine hair of aesthetic distinction, but it's a very important one. Those people who give up their lives and sweat and suffer and starve to create are not necessarily better than other people. It's simply that they produce something in, equal in profundity to the ratio of what they give to it. I think in Grandma's case, these things are, it's a great pleasure for her. Winston Churchill, I think, who was a fellow amateur painter of hers, once said that in amateur painting, no matter how frequently the amateur paints, one sees the only form of art in which the artist is more important than the work of art. In the case of a great creative artist, it tends to obliterate the artist. It's only when we're reminded of Van Gogh's agonies that we begin to think about them. The pictures, each one by itself, are what move us. In the case of Grandma Moses, it's always the personality of Grandma Moses which is mixed up inextricably with the picture. Her own painting seems in a strange way to have gotten better. If I compare her, the most recent works I've seen with those I saw 10 or 12 years ago, I find a strange kind of distillation. I think she's less concerned now with effect than she used to be. She's thinking only in terms of what she wants to do, which is really what all great artists do. They don't think of their audience when they paint. I think at the beginning she was perhaps a little more aware of that. I think she's improved in that sense. But there again, it's only within its own frame of reference. I can't say that it's improved in comparison to the whole great body of art or of painting.
What is a primitive painter? Their work, says Dr. Otto Callier, writes, appear crude and childlike. They stress flat pattern rather than depth. Primitive art seems spontaneous and close to nature. Why is Grandma popular? Again, Miss Backert of the Galerie Saint-Étienne.
Well, I'm sure part of it is her old age, which certainly stirs the imagination of people. To hear that a woman at the age of 77 started to paint and still paints at 96. Also, I think the encouragement that her work gives to other people is interesting. For instance, we have clippings from newspapers all over the country saying about Grandma Moses's of Ohio and of Michigan and of Kansas City and California. People who are in their 70s and 80s who begin to paint and enjoy it, and the neighbors call them Grandma Moses of such and such a place. So, you see, it's been a tremendous encouragement to older people and perhaps even to young ones to just begin painting. I think the main reason for her fame is that she is a very good painter, plain and simple. Her pictures just seem to be landscapes and very easily comprehensible. However, when you look closer and if you study them carefully, you find there's a lot of atmosphere in them and a lot of subtlety in color, design, and composition that is not easily duplicated and very hard to imitate. Another reason for her popularity is no doubt that her work can be understood by people in all walks of life and by people who speak all or any languages. It's true, she doesn't depict the psychological problems of our age. What she depicts is the farm life, the life she knows, the basic part of life. And of course, there is hardly anything more important than that. And that makes her all the more well-liked over here as well as abroad.
Another art critic, Thomas Hess.
Grandma Moses is a primitive painter, and primitive painting is interesting in that it brings you or brings the spectator into a direct contact with a human feeling, a human sensation, either of fear or of love or something like that. Grandma Moses is a primitive painter who brings you directly into contact with nostalgia and sentimentality. Therefore, I don't find her work very interesting because I don't think that nostalgia is very interesting as a human emotion. In the art itself, She is continuously repetitious. She has one composition as well as one emotion. And by repeating this composition or this scheme of making a picture over and over again, it loses its sense of freshness and its own contact even with nostalgia, because she's just doing the picture as if she'd memorized it. Europeans welcome her with open arms. The Europeans had the idea that Americans make slot machines and pinball machines and skyscrapers and shouldn't have anything to do with culture. So when Grandma Moses comes along, that's just what they want Americans to do. They want them to be primitive, folksy, and 19th century, and have no relationship with culture. Therefore, they welcome her as the typical American, the great American, which is really an insult to American art and to American culture, of which Europeans are rather frightened.
We wanted to get the European angle from NBC's correspondent in Paris, Leif Eid.
If you were in Europe, it would not be difficult to catch the spirit of the old continent's welcome to Grandma Moses and her work. But it is much harder to put in words. Let us say that wherever the paintings of Grandma Moses have been exhibited, and they've been shown now in 5 European capitals, they've attracted a great deal of attention. For instance, when 40 of her canvases were shown at the American Embassy in Paris, over 1,000 French men and women came to look in only the first few days. Among sophisticates who had high words of praise were André Maurois, a celebrated author, and Monsieur Jean Cassou, the director of the Museum of Modern Art here in Paris. In an art capital like Paris, where the painters of all the world assemble and where the competition is of the fiercest, this is astonishing. The critics of art periodicals and of the Paris Daily Press tossed bouquets in Grandma's direction. Grandma's works brought a smile to the faces of sophisticates of old Europe. Not a smile of condescension, of superiority, but a smile of contentment, of satisfaction, of happiness that there are still persons in the world like Grandma Moses. Le Monde referred to the serene sweetness of a daring old lady who makes even Europeans recognize themselves in her simple, free images. In comparing Grandma Moses with Europe's primitives, France Illustration noted that while Europe's had more technical facility, they lacked her freshness of inspiration and happy quality of feeling. One eminent critic said that while he prefers the great masters, Grandma Moses, in her own way, knows a piece that genius will never know. Another said, "This is an area where we dare not venture because the ice is too thin." It is in words like these that you catch the spirit of Europe's appreciation of Grandma Moses. Not a great master, not unusual because she is a primitive. Europe knows a lot of primitives. But because she manages to bring us the warmth of a simpler, happier past, and to bring a peace, even if only a temporary peace, to troubled souls.
As I travel abroad...
Again, Lillian Gish.
And find how highly respected and honored Grandma Moses is over there, and her paintings are the things. They don't know anything about the woman. In fact, they're not interested in the artist. They're interested in the work. And she is their number one painter. And here, as I travel through the country, there's a kind of indulgent smile that makes me very angry and reminds me much of Edgar Allan Poe. I think when he was writing in America, we indulgently smiled at his work, while in France, he was influencing all their literature of that day and future time. Why are we so reticent in America to recognize our own first-rate artists? Why can't we honor them first? At Christmas, Thanksgiving, or some national holiday, we should have a stamp, if not with her picture, with one of her pictures on it. I think it would please the country. I think we would all love to send our letters and our Christmas cards out with a Grandma Moses stamp on it.
In her lifetime, Grandma has probably painted some 1,600 pictures. Most of them are accounted for in galleries or private collections. Some of her best-known paintings, and all of them have titles, are called The Old Oaken Bucket, Sugaring Off, out for the Christmas trees, the old checkered house, and Christmas at home. Grandma Moses never paints from nature, only from memory and imagination. But she tries to make her pictures look as natural as possible, and even goes so far as to use glitter specks on winter landscapes to make the snow more realistic. Sometimes, she says, I paint 4 pictures at a time. It saves paint, you know. I do the blue for one sky, and then the 3 other skies. It's the Scotch in me. Painting, says Grandma, is a nice occupation if you don't want to do anything else. If you don't want to cook or scrub floors, then start painting. Of course, her family may be prejudiced, but there's a certain objectivity, too. Mrs. Fisher watches her mother paint, sees ideas grow on canvas, take on form and color.
Every picture tells a story. But when it comes to perspective and things like that, why, she just doesn't have it. She doesn't have to have it. It would spoil her if she did have, because it's her style. I've offered suggestions, but she... she doesn't accept my suggestions or criticisms. If I criticize a painting, I criticized one that she was working on not long ago. I told her that the bird was this, she was fussing about the tree, she had the tree trunk too small. And so the next time I noticed the painting, she had a bird in front of the tree that was wider than the trunk of the, much larger than the trunk of the tree. And I said, Grandma, I said, I just moved your painting over here, and I see you have a bird on. It's supposed to be a bird. It looks like a robin, the coloring. And I said, I don't know. That's some sort of a new bird to me. I don't know what it is. But she says, it's a lot nearer. She wouldn't admit it was out of proportion. Grandma will, as the type, she'll ask for suggestions and go until she darn pleases.
Some critics say Grandma is repeating herself, getting better at doing the same old thing. But Miss Backert, who's close to Grandma, feels that the artist is developing, trying new things.
It was in the fall of last year. Dr. Collier was up here, and Grandma was telling him about Halloween and all the pranks they used to play when they were kids, running around with sheets and scaring people and drinking the cider barrel dry when nobody was looking, and all that sort of thing, and they were having a grand time remembering various pranks, when Dr. Collier suggested to Grandma to paint such a picture. And she said, well, that is a night painting, and it's very unusual, and the subject she has really never attempted, but she would try. And a month or so later, we received a painting which is really very, very unusual. It doesn't quite look like the Grandma Moses that people would instantly recognize, but it is very excellent in its colors, and the figures are very good, remind you somewhat of Bruegel, and the activity in it is very amusing and also very interesting, and the atmosphere in it is just like Halloween would be. Somehow, it's one of her best pictures done so recently. She was 95 at the time, and it is quite remarkable, it seems to me, that she can put herself into the mood of an entirely new approach to a painting.
Still to be heard from, Grandma herself. First, what does she think of modern art?
Don't like it. And yet, I've seen it when it was a beautiful piece. And you look at it for a long time, and all at once, out of the bushes, you see a snake coming, beautiful snake, coming out, curling around, out among the bushes. You look at him, watch him a while. Pretty soon, you'll see a little boy coming out. You never look at them again, but what you see, those two things. So they're striking. I have a friend out at North Rose in the western part of York State, and he paints all his modern paintings. And he uses very beautiful colors. Beautiful. I've never been able to get those colors. I paint pictures to be pleasing, to be pleasant, cheerful. I don't like dull pictures, because I don't look at them the second time. But I want pictures that, once you look at them, you look back at them. Something enticing, either in color or scenery. Well, I'll go off on a drive or something, and I'll see something that pleases me. Then I'll try to paint a picture and goes with the scenery. So they criticize them. I like to have them criticize them, because then I see where their faults are. And now I will paint a painting and set it up, and I'll watch it for several days, maybe weeks. And I'll see where there's something wrong. Then I change it. They used to bring me lots of old frames, very nice frames. And I used to use those. I'd cut my masonite board to fit the frame, then I'd paint it. Well, I was doing business in those days. A picture is like a woman. A picture without a frame is like a woman without a dress. You ain't going to look at it much.
Grandma Moses, who'll be 96 years old on Friday, this greeting from Vice President Richard Nixon.
We here in the nation's capital are delighted to join with other Americans in extending best wishes to Grandma Moses on her birthday. She's a great lady and a fine example of pioneering America. President Eisenhower, who's something of a painter himself, has long admired Grandma's work. In fact, last January, we had a special surprise gathering for the third anniversary of the president's inauguration. And I presented, as a gift from the cabinet, a painting by Grandma Moses to the president. It was a big landscape of the president's Gettysburg farm. He couldn't have been more pleased. I remember that he noted very happily that Grandma had not forgotten to include an unusually large putting green right in front of his house. And also, she had given him several Holstein cows, whereas he had only one at that time. In one corner of the painting, she had depicted his three grandchildren, David, Susan, and Barbara Eisenhower. I know the president would agree with me when I say that Grandma is one of the amazing women of our time. She is a source of inspiration and hope to all of us that in our later years we can continue to live full and useful lives.
As America's grandma looks back on her 96 years, she must have some guiding principles to offer to those who would live that full and useful life.
Keep busy. Have something on your mind. And don't bother with your neighbors. Let them do as they see fit. Don't pay attention to them. Unless you can help them some way. Just have them have their own troubles and settle them among themselves. I think that's the best way. I've seen lots of trouble some days, but taken all in all, I think I have lived a happy life, because I'm not going to worry about other things. I take things as they come. You can't change it. Do what you will, you can't change it. You just trust the Creator.
This has been another in NBC's transcribed series of Biographies in Sound. Your narrator, veteran NBC reporter W.W. Chaplin. America's Grandma, written and edited by James P. Aldrich, was produced by NBC News for the NBC Radio Network. Grandma Moses portions of this program, copyright Grandma Moses Properties Incorporated. Next week at this time, another Biography in Sound. They knew Newt Rockne.